crazy people out there, but when I hear Robo Drum, it has a Pavlovian effect on me. My mouth starts to water. I start thinking about grilling. I start thinking about seasonal food. I start thinking about all kinds of things. That song just does it. Hey, everybody. It's Christo. Another edition of the Chef Christo Radio Show. We're on a day later. If any of you are taking notes and keeping track, normally we do Wednesday, but today we're doing Thursday due to all kinds of unforeseen circumstances. So you can call in. That's the fun part. I don't know why people just don't want to do that. I don't know if you don't want to hear your own voice. Everybody thinks their voice sounds funny when they hear it. So you'll be part of the crowd. We all think we don't sound like ourselves. I don't know who I think I sound like, but it doesn't sound like me. So it's 714-242-5272. If you want to call in today. I've got a guest. I'm going to be getting to him in a minute. I haven't had a guest in a few weeks, but we're excited now. It's the fall now. We're kind of moving into a whole new season. So we got over our little summer fun of just me on the radio. So we're going to have a guest here and there again, like we did before. Seasonal food of the week. I bet you're anxious to find out what that is. It's plums. Those of you out there that have plum trees, you're probably noticing this already. Plums. Plums are where you're looking for right now. There's the yellow plum, the purple plum, that kind of burgundy plum. Plums. Plums right now. Plums are in season. And the best thing to make out of that is a little plum clafoutis. That's a simple little pie to make. Just Google it, clafoutis. I can tell you how to do it quickly. A little flour, a little egg. You kind of whip it up like you're making a pancake batter. Get your cast iron skillet all preheated there with a little butter melted in the bottom. Throw in some chunks of plum, no seeds. Make sure you get the pit out of there. You can peel the plum if you want. Toss that around in there, pop it in the oven. It's going to bake up and puff up like a pancake. Dust it with a little powdered sugar, and there you go. You made yourself a clafoutis. Isn't that something, huh? Anyway, my guest today, very busy man. He's a charbroil all-star. He competes a lot, it seems like. I'm noticing he's going to competition after competition, and he really preps for these competitions. If he's going to cook a brisket, it looks like he's cooking six briskets before he cooks that one brisket. So he's does his homework. His name's Chris Grove. I'm excited to have him. He's got a cookbook coming out. I mean, it's out already. The Kamado Smoker Grill. Chris, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, good, my friend. How are you, Christo?
Not bad at all, not bad at all. You know, when I was censured, asked if I wanted to review this cookbook, it's a great cookbook, I just said yes, not even putting two and two together at the time. And and then your publishing house sends me the cookbook, Ulysses Press, and I'm like, oh my God, look at that. It's Chris Grove's cookbook. That's so, it was just a lot of irony there. It just cracked me up because Courtney's constantly sending me stuff and asking me if I want to review it and things. And I pick and choose. And, you know, I thought, well, good book. That would be fun. But this book, I wrote a review about it, and I was unbiased. There's, you know, there's probably some things that could be different, some full-page pictures and things like that. But it's chock full of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And it's chock full of information. Let's first start. What was it like putting this book together? And then we'll go into some of the details of the book. What's that like? I'm sure people out there, you know, people tell me all the time, they tell their friends, you need a cookbook, you need a cookbook. But what's that like?
It was very painful, actually. When they had asked me back in 2011 at the time, I just knew I wasn't ready to do that. And then the end of 2013, they came back. I had just gotten out of the hospital from having hernia surgery. And I was like, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, I went into this totally blind. You know, I've never written a cookbook, never really thought about doing one, so I had no idea what to expect, you know, what to do, you know, how long you should normally do it, and they wanted me to do it, and I basically got the book done in 110 days, which now that I've done it and have talked to people who've written books, I found out that was absolutely insane crazy to crank that out. So it was 110 days of Knoxville's worst winter, which you're going to laugh because, you know, you get a lot of snow. We don't. So 4 to 6 inches to us is, you know, like blizzard. You can't go out for 4 days. So I was out shoveling the deck off and trying to get these test cooks done. And so it was very stressful, to say the least, trying to come up with the techniques and recipes that I wanted to share. So it was, you know, a lot of brainstorming. I basically had a whiteboard out in the kitchen the entire time. We had our props set up in the living room, in the middle of our living room for 3 months. And you just tried every day. I was out there cooking, and you know, my neighbor is also a big green egg, and he would be out there and coming over to see what we were doing and trying to give me some ideas too. So it was beyond stressful, I guess.
Well, you've got, it looks like, 52 tips in here. Maybe there's more. It's these tips.
Yeah, 52 is what it ended up at. Yep.
Yeah, or no, well, there's tips. Yeah, you get 52 recipes. And how many different individual little, well, I guess that's all. There's stuff in here for
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, what I did is I didn't want it, yeah, I just didn't want it to be just a book of recipes. Because, you know, when you look at recipes, I know how you do, you scan them and you're like, okay, I know what I want to do, and throw the book down. So, you know, recipes are only kind of a guideline, but I wanted to share, you know, when I see, I have a lot of friends that have gotten big green eggs. My sister got one last year. So for the year prior to the book, I was always texting back and forth and calling back and forth with her where she would ask questions. And I kind of wrote the book based on kind of the stuff she and I had talked about. What are things you can do with a Kamado grill? What are the things that you need to do different versus a gas grill or a charcoal grill? So I kind of wrote it with somebody that was new to the Kamado grill in mind. So I try to make those tips things that they could take that, and even if they, you know, maybe they didn't like the idea of that particular recipe tied to it, they could go use that technique with something else and knew how to do it because I'd shared the information with them.
Well, for those listening out there, the name of the book is The Kamado Smoker and Grill Cookbook. It's Chris Grove. It's from Ulysses Press. It is available on Amazon, so you can pick it up out there. And it is just every page has just good information. And you know, I do this stuff all the time, but there's things that I never thought about, steam cooking, you know. But this is a grill. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't think about that sort of stuff.
Well, especially like the baking recipes and things like that. Yeah, no one ever thinks to bake bread on a grill.
Is it a big green egg or it's something similar or?
A Kamado is the type of grill. It's a Japanese design. You know, the storyline is it's a 3,000-old design. Well, the 3,000-old design was basically a clay pot that they used to cook rice in. But it's a very efficient grill, and there's several brands of Kamados. There's the Big Green Egg, Primo, Grill Dome, Kamado Joe. Those are like the four real big, you know, ones that a lot of people get. You can find dealers pretty much all over the country. And lately,
now that's important information for people to know right there, that the Big Green Egg is a style of grill called the Kamado. So, see, I wasn't fully aware of that. I probably should have been, but I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, because I had several different types, and I was in Costco, and they had the Vision Kamado brand for sale, and I heard a couple people walking by going, hey, look, it's a big green egg. Yeah, I didn't say anything. I'm like, okay, it's not a big green egg. But and that's the important thing for people to know. There are a lot of knockoffs out there right now, and you need to really pay attention to what you're buying. If you're interested in one, is making sure that you're getting a quality Kamado, not just some knockoff that's made of cheap ceramics that's going to break and then they're not going to honor the warranty. So, yes, they're expensive, but it's one of those you get what you pay for thing. If you get away with a $300 Kamado, you're probably going to get another one in a few years.
Right. So. See, that would be me. I'd be like, going, well, it's brown, but it looks like the big green egg.
Yeah.
It's a big brown
egg. It's one-fifth of the price. Yeah, I'd hate to try to get a Kamado upstairs to your rooftop outdoor kitchen there.
How much does one of those weigh a smaller one?
They weigh probably, I've never weighed mine, but it's got to be at least 200 pounds. I mean, because it's, you know, a 1-inch thick ceramic shell, and then you got ceramics inside and cast iron, so it is not light. It is definitely something that can...
One of those big performance grills, they're about 180, 200 pounds.
Yeah.
They're not easy.
It's a lot of weight to
lug
around. Yeah, but it's just, I mean, that's just something I've cooked on for a long time. I don't think it's the only grill out there. You'll hear a lot of people say that's the only grill to cook on, but to me, I was talking to someone the other day, and I said, you know, to me, grills are like cars. They all serve a basic function. Everything after that is basically price range and your preferences.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to be seen in? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you comfortable with? What are you used to? You know. Yeah.
Like those little smart cars, for example. You wouldn't catch me in one of those.
There's one that drives around town here that has a, you know, those little wind-up toy things? Remember the little wind-up toys where you'd have the little key sticking out? It has one of those sticking out the back of the car. I don't know where they got it, but they stuck it on their car. It looks hilarious.
That's pretty funny. That's really funny. Well, you know, it'd be ideal here in the city for parking. We're off on a tangent here on parking cars, but I can't imagine being in one of those out on a freeway or something or on an interstate. It would be terrifying. I just couldn't. I just don't know how these people do it. It just seems so dangerous, those little smart cars. So...
You sure couldn't haul much
of
the caterer.
Let's just go through some of
these
things right here. What is spider rig searing? There's some things in here that I have no clue. I'm not a barbecue master, grill master by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a chef, and I use barbecue grills a lot. And, you know, I am also a charbroil all-star. We're colleagues in that area.
Definitely.
There's so many things out there that you barbecue people know and talk about, spider rig searing. What
thing is that? Yeah, well, the spider rig itself is basically a wiring contraption or a metal rig. You know, most grills have a fixed grill surface and a fixed grill grate, so you can't adjust the height to the coals. Some charcoal grills do, some don't. Most gas grills don't. But with a Big Green Egg or, excuse me, a Kamado grill, you have an inside shell. You have the outer shell and then the inside shell where all the charcoal sits. And what the spider rig does is it sits on that inside shelf or shell and lowers down closer to the coal. So basically you're taking the grate from either 6 or 4 inches above the coals and putting it about 2 inches above the coals. And that's ideal for you're familiar with reverse searing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you
In fact,
slow
that's
roast
we've talked about on the show a few times. People are really
Where you get that big, nice, get a real nice, you know, inch and a half, 2-inch thick steak and slow roast it at 250 degrees for, you know, until it gets right at your the temp that you want. And then that's where the spider rig comes in handy, because then you go from cooking indirect, and now you're going to turn your coal, you're open up the air, let the coals get really hot. I mean, you know, in a Kamado grill, they can get to about 1,500 degrees, you know, right at the coals. So what you're trying to do is get that, it's kind of like putting it under a salamander. You're just putting that steak within, you know, an inch or two of those super hot coals and just getting that 30-second, 45-second hot sear on both sides, and you're done. So that's what the spider rig searing is. It gets it right down to the immediate heat of the coals.
Wow, that's where you're going to get that nice crust. That's where it's going to real seal in the juices. That's going to, in fact, I'm convinced that right there would convert people who don't like medium or medium rare steaks. Because I know what I like is I like that little kind of crispy outside, but I like mine to be really, you know, pink and red inside. But there's something about that crispy outside that's really good.
Oh, yeah, it's all that caramelization and flavor you get. And when you can do it super close to the coals like that, you're getting it done in no time at all. You're not raising up the internal temp anymore because you've already done that with the slow roast. All you're doing at that point is adding flavor and color to it. So quicker you can do it, the better.
And I'm just flipping
and,
through some pages here. You've got some fantastic ideas. You know, I'm going to have to steal a lot of these, by the way. I'll probably be doing that.
That's quite all right. That's fine. You know, you mentioned the pictures. That's... You know, the pictures is probably the biggest sore spot for me on the book. And, you know, you're like me. You do a lot of your 100% of everything. You're doing your own picture taking, recipe development, and everything. And to give up the creative control of your pictures to somebody else and let them crop them and pick which ones to use, that was the hardest part. And that's probably the part I was least happy with in the final production of the book is, I like a lot more whole page shots and stuff like that, and I took plenty to be used like that, and they just, I guess we just didn't have the room in the book for the layout.
Well, and that's an entirely subjective thing because you know the other pictures that you had, the cropping
that's
that
right.
you had in mind, but
mm-hmm.
Us readers we don't. So because
mm-hmm.
there's on every spread, you open up a page and there's at least three pictures, sometimes even more. Mm-hmm. Here we are in steam cooking on a Kamado. There's three pictures of the previous recipe on the left and a large picture right there on that page. You turn it over,
mm-hmm.
there's three more pages. So pictures are there. And cooking with the butt pan thing, what an idea.
That literally just fell into my lap. I mean, that was not a joke. I mean, I opened the one of my cabinets to get something out when I was going to steam crab legs, and that fell out. And I was like, oh, that is the perfect idea for steaming on the grill because, you get the smoke flavor coming up through the middle, but you can also, still cover it on the top to keep the steam in. So it was just one of those.
And that up the middle is like a little chimney, like a chiminea, so it's bringing heat up as well.
Oh yeah. So I didn't know if it would work, so I put some liquid in there, stuck it on the grill, and actually measured the temp of the water to make sure it would get hot enough to actually start boiling and steam, and it did, so that's what I went with. But yeah, that was just one of those lucky accidents. Sometimes it pays to be cluttered in the kitchen.
Right. I think people need to pick up this book. There's just page after page of good ideas for, people are getting more and more into grilling and mm-hmm. you probably get a lot of questions all the time. People are always asking me questions all the time. This book answers all those questions. I think from now on, when people ask me questions, I'm just going to open up this book. Say, oh, here you go. Veggie pot stickers.
With Labor Day being passed, a lot of people are putting up their grills, and I know you don't, but that's one of the reasons that we wrote it during the winter so we could have it for the grilling season. But I'm like you. I don't believe there is really a grilling season. I like to do it all year round. So.
Well, I don't understand that because it's hot out in the summertime, and a grill is hot, and it's hot to stand around it, and it's hot to stand around. I want watermelon and potatoes, sell cooler things. I enjoy mm-hmm. barbecuing and grilling when it's a little cooler out.
It's more fun, the fall is the best. Yep. You were talking about fall and seasonal vegetables and things like that, and I was like, fall is one of the best times to grill because you're out there, it's beautiful, you get, it's cool, you're not sweating, and, you don't have, flies flying around. That, to me, fall is perfect, and you got all kinds of fall vegetables coming in where you can get like a butternut squash and get a little bit of char on the grill before you're making your soup and things like that. There's all kinds of ways to bring the grill in.
Now you're talking. That's what it's all about right there. I think we need to start a campaign and get people to just grill year round. There's no reason why people have to just do it from 4th of July to Labor Day weekend.
That's one way to amp up the flavor. I don't know, but you can really amp up the flavor in your soups that way. Take your regular tomato soup, char the tomatoes on there, and then make your soup. I mean, you can take your regular recipes and just give them that little bit of extra just with 5 minutes on the grill.
Yeah, and that's one of my phrases that I use all the time is use the grill like a condiment. It adds flavor. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to stand out there and cook ribs for 4 hours. Just have it ready, like you said. Put some tomatoes on there. Grill them really fast. Grill up some fruit, I bet – I'm going to try this because I have a friend who just went through all kinds of surgery, so she can't have solid foods. It has to be all cooked also. But she was curious about grilling fruit to put into a smoothie so that she could have that, more complex flavors. And I thought, God, how odd that sounds, but it might just be good.
That totally makes sense to me because we like to grill – Yeah, we like to grill fruit for cocktails, actually. Not just the garnish, but, I mean, you know, you can do, if you're going to do lemonade, okay, grill your halves before you, make the lemonade, and it comes out with a richer flavor. I think there's, well, it's a Chris, I know it's
that
Chris Lilly
recipe,
I think,
for
it's on
grilling.com. Grilled lemonade.
There's one out there. If you grill, nibblemethis.com, that's where I do my normal experimentation. But, grilling fruit, there's all kinds of stuff that comes out in the fall that apples. I mean, okay, apples, what goes great with apples? Pork. So you get these great apples in the fall and do a pork roast and do a little apple compote to go with it. Fall is all about grilling for me.
And just a basic grilled apple, you know, would scoop it out in the center fill it with, you know, maybe some gorgonzola cheese or some walnuts or some nuts and take a few of those little caramel squares that you can buy in the store that are just already caramel, you know, little things. Drop a couple of those in there. They'll melt. There's a lot of shortcuts. You don't have to do everything the long way.
Right.
We've got a caller.
Okay.
Well, let's see. We've got a caller, Chris. How exciting. We have a caller on the line?
Yeah, hello?
Who's this?
Hey, you ever slap a big old meaty piece of shit of, you know, some...
Well, that's exciting. I don't know how Frank let that one through.
Interesting. Boy, you get all kinds, don't you?
Well, we don't typically get all kinds, but we did today.
Yeah. Right before that, I was going to say, we had Jeannie. You remember her that used to be on the Charbroil All-Stars? I know one thing she did with apples that was pretty neat and very easy that anyone could do on basically any grill was she took some apples and sliced them into like 1/2-inch slices, from top to bottom, and then took just a pre-made pie dough from the store and reassembled the apple in that, but between each layer she put just butter and cinnamon and then wrapped it all back up and then put it on an indirect on the grill and baked it at about 300, 350. And that comes out real good, and it looks real fancy. And you basically sliced an apple and sprinkled some butter and cinnamon on it. So easy. And
that sounds so tasty.
Oh, yeah.
There's a seat, and the fall is actually more abundant. You know, grilling is not just chicken wings and hot dogs and shish kebab and steak. You know, there's fruits and vegetables and a world of things out there. Vegetarians can have just as much fun on the grill as carnivores or omnivores. There's there's something for everybody. That's
the only thing that I think the thing you do lose out in fall compared to summer is right now you are putting some really colorful plates together, and that's the thing about summer. Almost everything you get in the summer is so bright and colorful, and it does kind of seem like some of the stuff in fall is a little bit muted, so you have to kind of try to come up with some effective garnishes and stuff like that to brighten it up. But other than that, I mean, I like grilling every season. They all have their strong points.
Well, you know, it's a little tough here. Like, you know, when it's winter there for you, you know, I guess it's just a little cloudy and a little windy.
Well, we do get snow. It's just it's not what you would call snow, but it paralyzes the city, you know. But seriously, 4 inches would shut Knoxville down for at least a day or so. So we don't have snow removal equipment and. Oh, yeah. Well, people here can't drive on snow. Half of them here are from Florida anyway. So, but,
we get a foot of snow here, and they still have school.
Yeah. Well, and you had mentioned competitions. Actually, as far as doing them myself being team captain, we've only done two. A lot of the stuff you've seen me doing is just getting ready for them or going with other teams. I have helped out 4 or 5 other teams. But this is our first year getting started just doing it and being our own team. And, you know, it makes a huge difference when you have a team captain telling you what to do. It's real easy to say, yep, I'll do it. Yes, sir. And when you're the one having to actually make all the decisions, now all of a sudden it's a whole new ball game. So We've only done the two so far. We've got three planned for next year. There's a local series here called the they're calling it the Triple Crown. So you get three local competitions throughout the summer, and that way you have a good way to gauge how you're doing, because you're going up against pretty much the same group of competitors and pretty much the same group of barbecue judges. So you can use that as a good barometer: are we improving, or are we just kind of staying where we're at?
Well, that's exciting, and I hear what you're saying on being the team captain thing. It's tough. I have to deal with that because I mean, I'm not entering competitions, but I do have chefs to come in and help me out. And you've got to be focused. You've got to be a good leader is one that's willing to do the work, and that's what's going to make it easier. When you're leading these other guys, and I'm sure you're seeing that if you're willing to roll your sleeves up and do it, then they catch on. And then you end up doing less leading.
Yeah, pretty much have to, because it's just three of us. There's me, my wife, and my neighbor John, who we kind of all formed together and just decided, let's go. I don't know why we decided. None of us had ever really done it, but we're like, hey, let's do this, and it's been fun. So, actually my wife got started. She got into it because the last year Chris Lilly came here with his team, Big Bob Gibson's, and we kind of hung out with him for that contest, and she helped him prep his boxes and stuff like that. I've been doing this for 8 years. She spends, one night at a competition with them, and that she's ready to do it.
Did you guys win anything this year during this little round of competition?
The only thing we've won so far, we got a third place on the chicken wings in the book, the Thai sticky wings. We turned those in at Tryon, and it got third place. So that was our first call. So I'm hoping next year to get a lot more. Yeah, we're looking to get a lot of top tens and stuff like that. But it's a growing process, because it's barbecuing for competition is not anything like what you do in your backyard. It's you're trying to put so much flavor, and these judges are going to be, each judge is going to be taking 24 samples of barbecue at least, and you've got to do something to really stand out above the other 23 samples. It's six chickens, six briskets, six whatever. So they're injecting.
I got invited to be a judge for a barbecue contest a couple of years ago, and I can attest to that. I had smoke overload by the whole time I was done. I didn't want to eat anything smoke flavored for months.
Yeah, after we judge barbecue.
I can imagine.
The first thing I want is a big bowl of Wheaties and a salad.
Getting a third is great. Our friend Danielle Demyoski, Diva Q, gets these kinds of thirds and fourths and sixths, and just to be mentioned at all is important in this barbecue world, because there's so many competitors out there.
Yeah, Danielle's on a totally different level than us. She's up there winning, competing at world championships. So, yeah, she's up there. She is incredible with what she does, and I've really enjoyed watching her barbecue crawl show this year. You get to see a lot of the fun and stress that she goes through doing all that.
Well, she does it full-time, so, it's three-quarter time, I don't know, a little more than part-time, a little more than just weekends.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I have a full-time job. That was kind of funny, because right before I called you, I was doing payroll, and because today's payday, and I was doing the payroll journal entry, and I was thinking, hey, I'm going to go from garnishment to garnish. But yeah, I have a full-time job. We have a company that has we have like 45 employees and three offices, so that's my full-time job. So I'm trying to get all this food blogging and barbecue contest and all that stuff in my spare time. So it's quite a challenge.
Well, thanks for being on the show today.
No problem.
We're at the cutoff. I don't know why we're not hearing the music coming in. It usually starts around the 29th minute. I guess
I can hear it in the background of my end.
You can? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's
well,
I hear it now.
Chris Grove, nibblemethis.com, everybody out there. The Kamado Smoker and Grill Cookbook, available on Amazon. Pick one up. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks, everybody, for
listening. And, thanks a lot. Well, I'll be talking to you soon. Bye-bye, everyone. Yeah, ain't no way.
Just when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.